Chapter 6 Bonding. Jin had nursed herself to sleep, and Lyra could hear Galen and the others talking in the main cabin, glad not to be a part of the conversation. For her, governments of any stripe would have their constituents believe that they were attempting to remove chaos from the galaxy, that they were trying to make things perfect, when only the Force was perfect. For ordinary beings, life was a constant interplay between order and chaos, day and night, light and dark. Her reverence for the Force had evolved from an enduring love of nature. Yes, she thought of herself as agile and strong and intuitive, but she understood that her skills were a far cry from those attributed to the Jedi. She did, however, embrace the Order's philosophy of generosity, compassion, and peaceful resolution. And on many a far-flung world, she had experienced moments in nature that could only be described as transcendent. It was certainly possible that those peak moments had their basis in belief and emotion, but that hardly mattered. Even if she wasn't able to use the Force, she could at least feel it, and she was content with that. Now what remained to be seen was whether the Force was indeed strong enough to overcome the powers of evil that had swept the Republic into a galaxy-spanning conflict. Could the Jedi triumph, or would evil cast its pall over even the brightest of worlds? Perhaps Orson was right to have brought Galen to beleaguered Grange. During their early time on Vault, she and Galen had been able to ignore the war, to concentrate on the research and the child growing in Lyra's womb like one of the team's glittering crystals. But they couldn't keep their heads buried in the snow forever. Now that they were returning to the core, it was essential that they come to grips with everything that was going on, the truth, as Krennic put it. Grange had never been a prosperous world, but just 40 standard years earlier, it had been little more than an outback. Galen had grown up an only child in a poor neighborhood in one of the larger cities. His father had been a merchant, peddling homegrown supplies, his mother a preschool teacher. Humble roots, it was said. But his mother, the first to recognize Galen's genius, had scraped together enough credits to surround her son with what he needed to keep his mind occupied, especially after he had started school and she understood that he was bored. First, a music synthesizer he was quick to master. Then, a chemistry set. And finally, whatever datacrons she could afford. When credits weren't tight, she would subscribe to a HoloNet service so that he can get a sense of the larger galaxy. That life didn't begin and end on Grange. Her contributions had the intended effect. By the time he entered secondary school, Galen was already excelling in mathematics and the sciences, and his teachers were using the term prodigy to describe him. He was learning languages and magic tricks just because, and he wound up building his own primitive HoloNet transceiver. More important, he was formulating theories and formulas before they were taught, in some cases solving mathematical problems in eccentric ways that surpassed his academic understanding. On several occasions, his solutions mystified his instructors, and it was one of those solutions, submitted off-world by a mentor, that drew the attention of scouts of the Futures program in Grange's sector of space, and then on Coruscant. Where losing a son to the core might have been traumatic for some women, Galen's mother could not have been happier for him. For she thought of it as her destiny as much as Galen's that he be surrounded by the galaxy's best and brightest. Hadn't he been born under a rainbow? Grange would have offered nothing more for him than to follow in his father's footsteps and become a merchant. The elder Erso was not as accepting of Coruscant's invitation, nor in the beginning was Galen himself, for he felt as if he already held the entire galaxy in his thoughts. He felt no need to demonstrate his gifts or to be groomed as an academic or scientist. He would have been content to be a merchant, content to explore life and the material world in his own fashion, his mind free to wander where it would, without being beholden to anyone. He talked a good game, but it was his innate shyness talking. He had a greater fear of attention than he did failure, refusing even to celebrate his birthday, much less receive gifts or acclamation. With romance, he was hopeless, pretending disinterest when in fact he was confused by his changing body and how it sometimes took him out of his mind, out of his deep thinking. He was already enrolled in the Futures program on Brenthal when he received word that his mother had died after a short illness. Her death and that of his father in a vehicular accident only a few years later were brutal blows to his sense of continuity, of permanence. Shortly after those events, he met Orson Krennic. Orson's name had come up in conversation several times before Lyra actually met him, when he began to frequent the Institute of Applied Science in the months preceding the outbreak of the war, and he seemed to be on good terms with many of Galen's former professors and peers. Though Lyra never saw it, Galen insisted at every turn that Orson was as bright and talented as anyone in the Futures program, and she still found it difficult to picture them as friends. One who had to be dragged to parties and events, the other whose nocturnal carousing had become legendary in the program. Orson had gone into government service. Lyra was never clear on whether he had graduated or been dropped from the program, but he had risen quickly to the fore in the Republic Corps of Engineers, supervising the construction of enormous projects, on world and in deep space. For Galen, graduation had been followed by advanced studies, research internships, and teaching positions. By 25, he had published prolifically and had earned a reputation as someone destined for greatness. Years earlier, it was Orson who had helped Galen land a visiting professorship at the Institute of Applied Science, which came not only with a good stipend, but also with an apartment he didn't need to pay for. By then, Galen had been narrowing his fields of interest and had settled on crystallography and energy enhancement, or as Galen saw it, crystals had chosen him. As a result, he had begun to travel widely in search of rare crystals, and it was during one of his expeditions that he and Lyra met. She was on Espinar, leading a survey team that had discovered and mapped an extensive cave system, in the depths of which the team had discovered caches of unique crystals formed from rainwater seeping through layers and layers of soil and rock, and sometimes sprouting like radiant teardrops on the tips of stalactites. The crystals turned out not to be kybers or even a class of kyber, but they bore enough similarity to the living crystal to interest the small community of scientists who had devoted themselves to their study. As either luck or fate had had it, Lyra was chosen to guide and provide logistics for the field team Galen assembled. She couldn't to this day say that it was love at first sight or anything close to that, though she did find him attractive and vital from the start. On Espinar, he would sleep until awakened or stay up until told to retire. He would allow himself to go hungry until provided with food or eat until someone advised him to stop. Sometimes Lyra couldn't get a word in edgewise, and at other times Galen wouldn't speak for days on end, preferring instead to seclude himself and write or sketch. He was continually organizing and reorganizing his equipment, and yet he struggled to keep his footing on steep grades. Sometimes when they spoke, she would feel as if she were conversing with a droid. Though she came to appreciate the breadth of his knowledge and his facility for sustained attention. She began to recognize, too, that what she interpreted as hostility was actually a ploy that allowed him to maintain a safe distance from her while he sorted out what she wanted from him and solved the calculus of their relationship. The expedition lasted 6 local months, and by the end of it, they were lovers. She had made the first move, but he had gotten the hang of things very quickly. And all at once, she occupied the center of his world. She had blazed a path to his heart, and in so doing, had allowed Galen to realize that, in fact, he had one. In the years before the war, Lyra had been concerned that Galen would shift from pure science to military research, but in retrospect, she needn't have worried. When many of Galen's colleagues began to accept government handouts for positions, he instead took an offer from Zirpan Industries to continue his research into crystal synthesis and energy enrichment. The last time they had seen Orson was shortly before the departure for Volt, when they had informed him of Lyra's pregnancy. And now, all these months later, who would show up to rescue them but Galen's old school chum? Still, how could she not be grateful? How could she even allow herself to be suspicious of Orson's intentions, even if he had twisted Galen up inside by bringing him to Grange? He had risked a great deal for them, and if he hadn't come, well, could even a Jedi know the future? She listened for a moment more to the muffled conversation. Yes, Galen was tied up in knots. With her maternal instincts running strong, she had to resist an urge to intercede. After all, she wasn't Galen's parent. She was his partner. Besides, Orson knew the real world much better than either of them did. Events of the past standard year already crystallizing as memories, Lyra began to drift to sleep with Jin's warm breath on her cheek. And she thought, if Coruscant was so changed, then perhaps Galen was going to need Orson's help more than ever.